Cause my glory so thin. Lord, what's the thing compassing me a blind? Lord, what's the thing compassing me a blind? I was taken by my mama, and I didn't feel that train no more.
Oh, what a fine pre-war classic tune there from Blind Lemon Jefferson, one of the masters of early pre-war blues, recorded in Chicago 1928. That was the Maltese Cat Blues. Plus, we heard from Lightnin' Hopkins from his Bluesville release that was called The Walkin' Blues. Up next, let's hear from Robert Johnson from a release called King of the Delta Blues Singers. Came out in 1994. This is called The Preachin' Blues. Robert Johnson on the Deep Blues Hour.
I left this morning her blues walking like a man.
Took the first step and quit smoking, but even former smokers may still be at risk for lung cancer. That's why SaveByTheScan.org wants you to know about a new low-dose CT scan that can detect lung cancer early. It takes only 60 seconds and could save your life. You took the first step, now take the next. Visit savebythescan.org for a simple quiz to see if you're eligible and talk to your doctor about screening. Savebythescan.org is brought to you by the American Lung Association's Lung Force Initiative and the Ad Council.
DJ Heim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
We have the latest inflation numbers. These numbers have been much anticipated. There were rumors flying around that year-over-year inflation, once March 2022 numbers were added in, would get into the double digits, over 10%, and that didn't happen. And we're going to talk about expectations. We're also going to talk about what the number means. But first, we all know if we participate in the American economy, meaning if you buy groceries, go out to eat, own a vehicle, a gas vehicle, pay utilities. I mean, everything is more expensive. My electrical bill is up. My grocery bill is up. People who have gas vehicles see that gas is more expensive. We know intuitively, because of our experience in the economy, that prices are up. And the question is how much and in what sectors. And we now have that information. And inflation has indeed increased by the most since 1981. And the consumer price index is up 8.5%. Now, there are people confused about what this means, but the reporting is also confusing. When we talk about an 8.5% price increase, we don't mean that in March prices went up 8.5%. However, a lot of the reporting makes it seem that way. I mean, look at this Yahoo Finance headline, which says inflation rises by the most since 1981. As the consumer price index jumps 8.5% in March. I understand why some people are confused, but so that you know, this number means that in the year ending March 2022, the consumer price index is up 8.5%. The previous number was February to February. The new number, 8.5%, is March to March. Prices didn't go up 8.5% in March. They went up 8.5% in the year ending March. Now, it's on the one hand, why am I talking about this so much? On the other hand, if you don't understand that, you don't have any idea what's going on. And there's people all over Twitter and all over my feed saying, can you believe it? Prices are up almost 10% in 1 month. No, they're not. These are high numbers. These are the highest inflation numbers since 1981 for a one-year period. But unless we all are on the same page about what this means, we're really not going to get anywhere. And the reporting doesn't make it particularly more clear. Now, you look in more detail at the numbers, and you see that there are a number of different areas that are sort of leading this. Some of the biggest contributors to the increase were food. We know that. We know groceries are up. We joke a lot about mango prices, but grocery prices are up. Shelter, rents and home property properties, real estate, and gasoline. And the index tracking gas prices surged up 18.3% month on month in March, comprising more than half of the total monthly increase. So half of the increase in prices in March was gasoline alone. And in February, gasoline had a 6.6% monthly increase. So this is, if you want to have a real conversation about this, you kind of have to get away from the politics, because there's a lot of, this is just Joe Biden's fault. And of course, there's global inflation. Gas prices are up everywhere. The most important aspects of this to me are kind of twofold. One is the reaction. Why is the stock market up today if these numbers are so terrible? And as of right now, as we're filming, the stock market is up significantly today. The answer that we are taught, and we can all judge whether it makes sense or not, is that the market had already priced in that the numbers could be even worse. There were rumors inflation could be above 10%. Now, the actual economic forecasts were exactly this. They were 8.4%. We got 8.5% year over year. But because the market now has the certainty that it's not going to be worse than expected, the market is doing well. Some people just don't care. Okay, but if we want to analyze that, that would be one thing to think about. The other aspect of this is there are lots of people pushing hot takes on social media that this isn't the real number, that the real number is above 10%, and that the metric of the consumer price index doesn't accurately take that into account. Well, that's an argument that you can have at any time. Very often when unemployment numbers come out, you will see people come out of the woodwork and they'll say, you know, when in the unemployment system, you stop looking for work, you're no longer considered unemployed, so the number is not accurate. That's true, but that's been a reality in the unemployment system for 40 years, going all the way back to Reagan. Is that closer to 50 years now? The point is, you can't cherry pick when you point out the limitations of a metric to try to make a point about only the latest numbers. That's dishonest. This is the way that we've measured these things for a long time. My prediction is worth as little as everybody else's. I mean, I'm the first to tell you, humans are terrible at making economic predictions. My prediction, and this is just an opinion, is that we're basically at the peak here of inflation, and that we're going to start seeing a slow decline in year-over-year inflation, maybe starting next month with this month's numbers, but more likely in the next 2 to 3 months. That's my prediction. What might delay it a little bit would be gas prices in general tend to go up over the summer, more people driving, taking road trips, etc. And if that's the case, it may push it off even a little more. But my sense is within the next 4 months, we are going to start to see a decline that unless something dramatic changes, should continue. Let's talk a little bit about the COVID pandemic. We may be approaching what might be the first so what wave, and I'm not the person who came up with that. There's a good Atlantic article that uses that term. We had the original wave. We had Delta. We had Omicron. And we may be getting to the first so what wave where most people may just not do anything differently. We just don't know. But pandemic fatigue aside, it's starting to look like something may be happening. So a few headlines. Philadelphia is restoring indoor mask mandates as cases rise. We've gotten away from almost any mask mandates. Yes, transportation federally, although that may go away April 18th, although it may not now that the numbers are starting to rise in some places again. Medical facilities in I think most states, I don't even remember if that's federal. In most places, you go to the doctor, you're still supposed to wear a mask, at least in the Northeast. But we are starting to see some things happen again. Philadelphia will restore its indoor mask mandate. The Associated Press reporting confirmed COVID cases up more than 50% in 10 days. That's a predetermined threshold where the city says masks go back on indoors. This is being driven by the BA2 subvariant of Omicron. The original Omicron was BA1. BA2 is this subvariant of Omicron. U.S. State Department orders all non-emergency government staff in Shanghai, China, to leave as COVID surges. However, the Chinese Foreign Ministry is not pleased with this. On Saturday, Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson Zhao Lijian said the U.S. characterization of China's COVID policy was a groundless accusation, and that the Chinese side has assisted foreign diplomats and consular staff on COVID-related issues. This is in response to the U.S. State Department warning about the arbitrary enforcement of local laws. Universities reinstating mask mandates amid COVID surge. The American University announced Monday it's putting a mask mandate back on in D.C. Columbia, Georgetown, Johns Hopkins, Rice universities are also doing this. The reason? The highly transmissible BA2 subvariant, an average of more than 31,000 new COVID cases across the country. COVID could be surging in the U.S. and we might not even know about it. This is also an important issue, and I know a lot of people are sick of hearing about this. We know that there is less testing going on. We also know that a lot of the home testing is not being reported to authorities. So a lot of people, this started to be an issue during the first Omicron wave in December, it's an even bigger issue now, where increasingly a lot of people are testing at home, testing positive, and then they throw the test out and they go, I'm positive, and that's it. That doesn't show up in the numbers anywhere. I have no reason to think Sam Cedar is doing this, but we sadly learned yesterday that our friend Sam Cedar from the Majority Report has tested positive. He's had a bunch of different negative tests, didn't feel well, now he's positive. I don't know what type of a test that was, but the point I'm making is, without accusing Sam of anything, if Sam's eventual positive test was a home test, that's not automatically counted anywhere unless Sam reports it. And because of the decrease not only in people seeking tests, but also the decrease in some of these municipal and federal testing sites, we just know we're almost certainly not capturing all of the cases that are going on. So what's going to happen? I don't know. I am convinced that the threshold for people going back into a cautious state is much higher, much, much higher than it was before. And what I mean by that is, a slight increase in cases and deaths at this point for social reasons is not going to kind of drive us back in terms of our precautions. I think people are much more comfortable accepting a certain level of risk. I'm not immune to that. I went to Las Vegas last week. There was not a mask in sight. I was around thousands of people. And thankfully, I didn't get sick. And, when I got back, I didn't see people for 4 days until I really knew I was in the clear. But would I have done that at a previous time? Probably not. At the same time, the numbers look a lot better. So we're going to have to see what happens. I think you will absolutely see a much more stark difference between states as, in all likelihood, cases continue to rise and eventually hospitalizations do as well. Let me know your perspective on this. Let me know what you're doing. Let me know what you're seeing in your state. You can find me on Twitter at @dpacman. And 1 week from today at 6 p.m. Eastern, we'll have the next David Pacman Show Town Hall. I hope you'll join. Everybody gets to ask questions. And it will be streaming live on the Pacman Live YouTube channel. Remember that we are a viewer and listener supported program. I would love it if you signed up at joinpacman.com. We do an extra show every single day for our members. You can also gift memberships. We have nearly 700 people who have asked for a membership. They can't afford one. They're on a list. And you can donate memberships to these people. Just sign up at joinpacman.com and check the box, "This is a gift," when you go through the process. We will, in order of request, give away memberships as they come in. You can request a free membership at davidpacman.com/free-membership. Okay, I almost missed this because I was traveling over the weekend, but my colleague John told me that there was another one of these defeat the mandates rallies in Los Angeles over the weekend. This is one of the most dangerous dystopian events that I've ever seen. It's also hilarious in that they bring in speakers that are like the most boring speakers in the world, completely uninspiring in any way. And every detail about this event is absolutely horrifying. We're going to look at some of these clips. Lara Logan spoke. She's the now Fox host who has gone completely off the rails. Jimmy Dore spoke. I can't even really call him a leftist. He's kind of like a neo-contrarian, I guess is what I would say. He spoke, Robert Malone spoke, who's this doctor who's made a lot of headlines by being skeptical of vaccines and pushing unproven treatments and this type of thing. And this is scary in every sense. So let's just look at a few of these clips. First and foremost, they brought up a kid to speak, a 14-year-old kid whose mannerisms and delivery are very Trumpian. They brought him up. This might be the most disturbing moment when they bring up this kid to speak against vaccines. Take a look at this.
We are here in Grand Park, Los Angeles, gathered. Oof. Do you want to know why we're gathered here? Because it's time to take back our country!
From who? There's like no mandates left. What are you talking about? This is a freedom activist, Lucky Basseri.
America will be strong again.
It's got a kind of mix of the political ignorance and scientific ignorance we've come to expect from the anti-vaccine movement, combined with a kind of tent church revival vibe.
Our country is in peril, deep peril.
That's true, but it's in peril because people are willing to go, more people are willing to go to a rally like this rather than to a rally to actually solve real problems that we have. It is in peril, but it's because of these people.
The Constitution is being disregarded as nothing more than a piece of paper, and I will not let it stand.
Ooh, whoa. Whoa.
This is not a Democratic issue. This is not a Republican issue. It is an American issue. Freedom. All Americans deserve to be free. Our founding fathers founded this country.
All right. So I am getting a little bit nauseous. I don't know how much more of that we can do. So that's extraordinarily disturbing. But then the entire event was just filled with some of the most ignorant people that don't know anything. And it's the blind leading the blind. We'll look at a couple examples. Here's one guy who makes some really strange claims about everything, including Sweden.
They're going to talk later. They're coming at around 3 o'clock. But let me end. Let me end by the critical issue here. This is about they're coming for your children. There is no science. There's no data. We've looked at the science. We looked at the science in Sweden. Zero deaths. Zero. We looked at the science in Germany. We looked at the Danis et al. Study that was published that showed in the French Alps, one infected child was exposed to 109 contacts. They followed them. Not one instance of secondary transmission.
Okay. So I don't know what he means by no one died in Sweden. Like I genuinely don't know what he means. If he means no one died of COVID in Sweden, obviously that's not true. We're putting deaths by age up on the screen. If he means no children died of COVID in Sweden, I mean, that's also not true. Sweden's like a U.S. state, right? I mean, it is a relatively small population. 15 kids, 9 and younger, died of COVID in Sweden. 8 kids, 10 to 19. I mean, I don't know what he means, but obviously people died in Sweden. So that was weird. Then this was interesting. Jimmy Dore spoke and he's reading off of a piece of paper. Everybody, including Jimmy, he doesn't even seem to know what he's reading. And it's just all so weird.
Dates and passports are the major issue of the day, with millions of people protesting against them worldwide. In fact, what has become known as the medical freedom movement is arguably the biggest and most diverse international movement in world history.
Really an inspiring speaker, huh?
And you're part of it.
Yeah.
Vaccine mandates, vaccine passports are among the most vile, unconstitutional, immoral, unscientific, discriminatory, and outright criminal policies ever enforced upon this population. That's what? The Black Caucus or the Green Party. F-ing white supremacists. Don't turn on each other. I have more in common with every person here than I do with Bill Gates.
Yeah, and I guess what he means is, like, even though he's ostensibly on the left and this is like a mostly right-wing nuttery rally, he has more in common with them. I mean, like, yeah, we know that. That seems pretty clear. Another great inspirational speaker. It's hard not to hear Dr. Robert Malone speak and just feel energy coursing through you.
Dignity and community. Integrity is a commitment to truth in what you say, how you live, and how you treat others. Dignity flows from respect for ourselves, for each other, and for the world we live in. Community is what binds us together. It's what's gone wrong. It's what binds us together to each other and gives our lives purpose and meaning.
An absolutely electric Dr. Robert Malone reading off of a laptop.
These are the three things we must recover if we will heal. The problem is not the virus. The problem is the damage that has been done to us as human beings and as a community. The other day I was in Paris and I drove by a little church. It was the Church of St. Augustine, the doctor of the Roman Catholic Church, who famously said, "The truth is like a lion. You don't have to defend it. Let it loose. It will defend itself."
Naomi Wolf was there. She's also sort of like someone formerly, I guess, associated with the left who's gone completely out of her mind. She appears to have almost like a psychotic event or some kind of mania. Check this out.
There are a lot of moms out here and dads, but I want to speak as a mom and as a stepmom. You hurt our kids. And watch out, because you have never faced the rage of thousands of furious mothers and stepmothers.
And it's like, what are you guys protesting against? I don't even really understand why the event is happening. They then interviewed a Dr. Michael Huang, who claims he's treated 3,000 COVID patients. And he uses this bizarre phrase where he says he has helped 1,000 kids come off of masks, almost like some kind of drug treatment program. It's a bizarre 60 seconds of video.
There are some cities that are still holding on to mask mandates, even for toddlers. What would you say to parents that are wanting to believe maybe your message? What would you say the physician's view is of children wearing masks?
We have helped over 1,000 kids come off mask. I have treated.
What does that mean? They brought them in and we detoxed them. And it was tough. We gave them and we got them off of the masks. It was tough. They were sweating. They had the cold sweats, but we got them off the masks.
Few children that with COVID never had to actively prescribe any medication. There's a tremendous stratification between the young and the old. Young people basically very, very mild disease. So no fear. I need to let the parents know, do not be afraid.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's again, most people recover and most people recover without taking anything. No, they cite that like that should really change our perspective. Most people don't die of COVID. Most people don't die of COVID. Most people don't need any medication to recover. But that doesn't make a plan for dealing with a pandemic. It's just not surprising. And then lastly, there was anti-trans stuff at the Defeat the Mandates rally as well. You tell me what the connection is between anti-trans and anti-mask, anti-mask and anti-vaccine.
In the dark, you eat when you're hungry, and wait, I've got one for you. I don't know if you're ready for this.
Right.
Men are not women. Wait a minute, wait a minute.
What a powerful message for medical freedom there, huh? So an extraordinarily dangerous event. And again, the really scary and horrible thing is that people go to this stuff. These movements have followers in the United States. And it is really scary because we all want to solve real problems. And when you've got a not insignificant portion of the population buying into this stuff, what a tragic event. Everyone who was there should be absolutely humiliated. I want to do a short update on a story we did yesterday. Yesterday, I told you that Lizelle Herrera has been charged with murder for a, quote, self-induced abortion. Those charges have now been dropped, and the entire story is getting even more strange. So Newsweek reporting abortion murder charge against Texas woman spurs calls for a HIPAA lawsuit, an actual HIPAA lawsuit, not like someone asks Marjorie Taylor Greene, "Are you vaccinated?" And she goes, "That's my HIPAA." No, Marjorie, it's not. The article says, officers arrested the 26-year-old on charges of intentionally and knowingly causing the abortion, sparking international backlash against Texas abortion restrictions. She miscarried at a hospital and allegedly confided to hospital staff that she attempted to induce her own abortion, and she was reported to the authorities by hospital staff. Starr County District Attorney said Sunday he would drop charges against Herrera, but the incident led some critics of Texas abortion policy to argue the arrest stemmed from a HIPAA violation, meaning that medical professionals disclosed patient information, and they are suggesting that she sue. So there's two different things here. First of all, she was charged, and we said, what the hell are they thinking? And then as soon as it became national news, they say, there was no criminal act, we're dropping the charges. This is the office that indicted her in the first place. So what were they doing? Were they testing the waters to see what they could get away with? Will they do it next time and maybe there won't be a public outcry and then you actually go through with the prosecution of a woman for abortion? What is it that they're trying to do? Are they trying to instill a sort of chilling effect on women in Texas about, listen, you could get arrested if you get an abortion? We don't know. Okay, that's one side of it. And then the other side of it is, was it a HIPAA violation for the hospital to call the police? There is a HIPAA exception for if you suspect someone committed a crime in good faith, and how do you know if it's in good faith? If you, as a medical provider, suspect someone committed a crime, there are exceptions to HIPAA. They are very narrow, and you have to, if I understand correctly, believe the crime was committed on the premises, meaning the hospital or wherever. There's no indication that the attempt at a self-induced abortion took place at the hospital. And thus, as I understand it, this would not qualify for that HIPAA exemption. It has to be investigated. But also remember that abortion is not a crime. So the entire thing is a mess. It should be looked into whether there was a HIPAA violation. But the good news is, at least in this case, charges were dropped, although we can speculate about what the broader goal was of bringing charges in the first place. We'll have more on this on our Instagram at David Pakman Show, and I hope to hear from you. What do you think the goal was here? Today, we're going to be speaking with Dr. Stephen Novella, who is a neurologist, host, and producer of the award-winning podcast, The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe, and also lead author of the best-selling book by the same name. I really appreciate your time. It's great having you on today.
Oh, thanks for having me on. It's great to be here.
The book and the podcast, really, these are excellent sources for thinking about how to evaluate why we believe the things we believe, why others believe the things they believe, how to engage with epistemology and critical thinking, which is so important right now. We could start this conversation any of a number of different ways. Can you talk a little bit first generally about the approach you find most useful when engaging with people with different views to kind of create a baseline from which we can have conversations about, do we believe things that are actually true? What's the general approach that you propose?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, saying that we need a baseline is a good approach. The first step is always to establish some common ground, because if you don't have common ground, pretty much you're just fighting, right? You're not talking, you're not engaging, you're not going to make any progress. And you might have to back up quite a ways to find out where that common ground is. People make a lot of assumptions. They don't even realize how many different things go into their worldview and how many assumptions are in there, and that somebody else might not share those same assumptions. So even things like, how do we know what's real? Or what evidence is reliable evidence, et cetera. You know, once you establish that common ground, you might actually also be surprised to find that you have a lot more common ground than you may think. That's another common experience. And then you can build slowly, carefully from there. What are the goals? How are we going to figure out, how to proceed here? I think that's a general picture. If you just back up and find common ground, that's a good way to begin.
There are some pitfalls sometimes in a lot of these conversations, and I'm curious as to your thoughts about how to navigate them. You know, there's these concepts that are often bandied about, like Dunning-Kruger, the idea that someone lacks the ability or knowledge to understand that they are not necessarily fully equipped to have a certain conversation, which comes off as very insulting sometimes, to say to someone, in whatever words you want to use, you know, Dunning-Kruger may be limiting your ability to engage meaningfully in this conversation. The reality is sometimes people are kind of in over their heads. So what are some more productive ways maybe to establish that someone may just not have all of the information to engage?
Yeah, so, you know, I think the first realization is that Dunning-Kruger and logical fallacies, critical thinking skills, media literacy, these things don't apply to other people. they apply to you. They apply to everyone. So if you're using, you know, these critical thinking concepts as a weapon in order to, you know, essentially knock down or attack somebody else, you're doing it wrong. You know, these mainly are methods of policing your own thinking. And so like Dunning-Kruger, it doesn't mean that some people are like don't have the information to evaluate their ignorance. It's everybody does, just to a different degree on different topics. But unless you are at the cutting edge of world expertise in a very, you know, narrow topic, it applies to you. There, you know, you don't have enough information to really meaningfully engage in, you know, how we know what we know about some cutting edge tech, especially technical topic. And so the other half of that is what we call neuropsychological humility, right? It's so that we all have to be humble. I'm not saying that like you're dumb or you can't engage in critical thinking or you're cognitively biased. It's we all are. We all need to confront the way our brains work, the way our logic tends to work. And, you know, again, this gets back to the common ground thing. It's like we all need to work together to identify the limitations in our knowledge, identify maybe some of the biases that we're working with, and then again, see if we can build from there to some kind of common ground.
One of the things that particularly during the pandemic often comes up, and I get a lot of emails from people about this as well, is someone will say, yeah, okay, so the CDC and the WHO and my local doctor, they say this, but did you see that, like Gary Null, for example, is a name that people often email me about, or they'll say, or Dr. John Campbell on YouTube said this about ivermectin or whatever. And sometimes I have the instinct, like when callers say this stuff, to talk a little bit about credentials, like to say, well, you know, Dr. John Campbell, he has a doctorate in teaching nursing. He's not a medical doctor. But at the same time, I know that it's sort of an appeal to authority. But I recognize it might be relevant for someone to know whether we're talking to a medical doctor or not. Like, it seems relevant, but at the same time, it's kind of just like going right to credentials. What makes sense when it comes to something like that?
This is perhaps the trickiest thing that we engage with, because it's basically dueling experts, right? And you can find an expert to say whatever you want, to support whatever position you want to have. And you feel like, I'm listening to the experts. I got these experts over here. And this phenomenon has been weaponized. It's not like it's just a random thing. There are people who are trying to lead you down a path paved with these, you know, cherry-picked outlier expert opinions or pseudo-expert opinions, or sometimes they're not experts at all. And you know, you have to be able to pick your way through that. But again, if you're not an expert, how do you do that? Again, you're not in a position to evaluate which experts are legitimate. So you need to have some basic algorithms that you use, some basic things, you know, red flags or processes that you go through to have at least a reasonable way of evaluating people who have more expertise in an area than you do. So I think probably the biggest thing to do is to listen to a consensus of many experts over an opinion of one expert. No one expert is definitive. Any one person can be wrong, could be a complete outlier. But if you have, you know, organizations that have some legitimacy, like they're not an ideological organization or like, you know, exist for the purpose of pushing an agenda, but they're like a university or a professional organization, et cetera. And they say, yeah, we put together a panel of experts and they recommend this. This is how they, like the American Medical Association, for example, or, you know, any other like medical professional organization who say, yeah, we reviewed the evidence and this is the standard of care that we think is the case. Or, you know, the intergovernmental, you know, panel on climate change. Yeah, we have 3,000 climate scientists got together and they go, yeah, this is 95% likely what's going on. You know, you can't put that up against one, you know, one person as an expert in isolation and say that they're equivalent. I think that's, if you just did that, just sought out, you know, what seemingly objective consensus opinion among the greatest number of experts possible, you're much more likely to be correct than listening to one guy on YouTube, no matter what his credentials seem to be.
When it comes to medications, would it be rather than what one person says or
a small study one doctor did saying the standard is sort of like the randomized controlled trial, and that would be what we look to?
Yeah, well, that's certainly, now you're saying what is the standard of evidence within that field,
yeah,
right? So certainly with drugs and with a lot of medical treatments, the standard is the randomized trial. But it, more than that, actually, it's a systematic review of multiple randomized controlled trials.
Gotcha.
One trial doesn't really tell you anything, because any one trial could be a quirky result. It could be, you know, you don't know what the pattern is. Statistically speaking, you can't make many firm conclusions based on one study. But once you see what the pattern of evidence is among many studies, and that requires an expert systematic review, which is a great way, by the way, to get a good, quick idea of what is the consensus of opinion about this medical topic, is look at some, you know, high quality systematic reviews, you know, then that tells you what's likely to be the case, because then you're seeing a pattern of evidence, not just one piece of evidence.
Right now, what set of factually false beliefs? I'm not using the term conspiracy theory, because sometimes it's not really a conspiracy theory. It's just people believe something that's not true. What's the most concerning or to you, or that you believe is most damaging to us in society right now?
Well, I mean, certainly anti-vaccine attitudes are incredibly harmful, especially in the middle of a pandemic. I mean, it's definitely slowing down and impairing our ability to tamp down this pandemic, increasing the odds that new variants are going to emerge and prolong, you know, the pandemic. So that's definitely, you know, in the short term, that's probably the biggest thing. Long term, I have to say climate change. You know, the conversation we need to be having is how best to avoid the worst case scenarios of climate change, how to mitigate the expensive, you know, and very disruptive effects that are already happening and we know we're going to be getting worse, rather than the endless discussion of is it happening, or, you know, trying to do whatever we can to avoid, you know, reducing fossil fuel company profits, which is, I think, what most of the, you know, the pushback is really all about. We sort of get stuck spinning our wheels. And again, that's on purpose. That's by design. You know, literally there are paid PR experts who spread, you know, fear, uncertainty, and doubt to delay things as much as possible. It's just so easy for that to happen, because, you know, it's just easy to generate the sort of false skepticism, you know, what I call science denial, in order to prolong the discussion in this preliminary phase of, is it happening? Is there anything we can do about it? And then, of course, to sort of nitpick and shoot down any proposed solutions, rather than engage meaningfully with, you know, what is the best solutions, you know, to this problem? What will minimize any short-term negative economic impact? What's going to have the greatest chance of succeeding long-term, et cetera? And there's lots of great, you know, proposals on the table, and it's happening. It's just, we just need to accelerate it so that we can, you know, again, avoid risking some tipping points or the worst outcome. So, or in the long run for humanity, I think that's the biggest, you know, issue that we're facing.
There are people who sometimes categorize false beliefs with a very fine line between them. The sort of the ones that are materially damaging, like you point out, climate science denial, preventing us from actually putting in place, you know, some real infrastructure here to deal with this, or anti-vax is literally prolonging a pandemic. And then they'll say, okay, and then there's a fine line. And on the other side, there's stuff that's basically benign, like flat Earth, for example.
Yeah.
I've spoken to psychologists who specialize in paranoid and conspiracist beliefs and different people who say it's not really that fine of a line, because often something seemingly benign, like flat Earth belief, is associated with people with anti-Semitic conspiracy theories that they believe, or there's overlap with the anti-vax movement or whatever. Can you give us your sense of whether there really are these two categories, or whether it's much more of a gray area?
Oh, there aren't two categories. It's all just a continuum of one thing.
Okay.
There's certainly more or less direct harm or demonstrable harm from certain belief systems. Like if you believe that modern medicine is a conspiracy, you know, and you should treat all things with prayer or drinking your own urine or whatever, something bizarre like that, which
yep,
people actually believe, by the way, then that's sort of you could easily see how immediately harmful that can be. There's the other beliefs, so like flat earther, for example, you may, or belief in ghosts is one we all, well, who cares if people believe in ghosts? It's the harm is not as obvious. but it's still there. You may need to dig a little bit to see what the tangible physical harm is, but there's also epistemological harm, right? When people believe in magic, when they don't understand the basics of how science is working, when they believe it's all a conspiracy, you are setting them up for the harmful conspiracy to come, the more immediate, obviously harmful thing. And sometimes it's not that long a trip there. If you believe in magic, you believe in, you know, astrology or whatever, then you're much more likely to be hoodwinked by, let's say, a psychic who, you know, we know there are fraudulent psychics out there who steal millions of dollars from people. I mean, that's not harmless. So, you know, the harm may be a little bit more secondary and harder to quantify, but it's there. And when you do this, you know, for a living for a long time, you see the harm. Even if it's a little bit downstream, there's tremendous harm from believing in magic. It makes you incredibly vulnerable. It is not isolated. And so, you know, we should not think of these things as benign at all.
Do we all have some of these beliefs? Like, for example, I think of myself as, you know, someone who follows science, and I ask myself, why do I believe this or that? But just like to pick something random, oftentimes when I'm traveling somewhere new and eating some food I've not had, I'll mention, I really hope this doesn't make me sick. And I think on some level, I think that by mentioning it, I'm kind of like putting it out, and it's like less likely that a weird new food mm-hmm. in some new country will. I don't really believe that. I know that the thing I say doesn't actually make a difference, but it's sort of like one of these, it's a false belief. It doesn't really have an impact on whether a food will make me sick. Do we all have some of these things, do you think?
Oh, sure. So, no one is intellectually pristine, right? So, you know, humans are predisposed to superstitious thinking, like what you're saying. And sometimes, you know, we engage in that for fun or for comfort or for because of tradition or ritual. But we know intellectually, like, yes, there's no magic here. This is not actually true. I cannot ward off food poisoning by saying, I hope this isn't poisonous, but you still do it. That's is benign. If you know intellectually, this is not true.
Yeah.
And it's just part of just human behavior. Although, you know, some people like to police that within themselves as well, just, because they think it could help keep their critical thinking skills focused, which is fine as well. But also in terms of what we actually believe, no one's, you know, belief system is, or what they hold to be true is perfect either, right? It's just impossible to get to that point where, yes, I purged myself of all inaccurate conclusions and false beliefs, and everything I believe is 100%, you know, accurate, true, and precise. That's an aspirational goal that we will never get to. The real difference between people are those who engage in metacognition and those who don't. What's metacognition? It's basically thinking about thinking. It's turning a analytical eye towards your own thinking processes and trying to understand how you come to conclusions, how you come to believe things, examining, improving, tweaking that process, being open to changing your beliefs based upon evidence and logic, etc. And those people who don't really actively engage in metacognition, they sort of go with their psychological process level. They're just sort of they're following the current, you know, the mental current to whatever conclusion it brings them to, and not examining the process.
We're going to pause our conversation there with neurologist Dr. Stephen Novella, the Skeptic's Guide to the Universe podcast and book. We will post our full extended conversation on YouTube at youtube.com/TheDavidPackmanShow. Okay, so yesterday we did this Fox News has gone silent on ivermectin story, and I explained to you that very early on, 300 plus mentions of ivermectin by Fox News hosts saying it's good and people are being treated by it and it's being covered up and all this different stuff. And then we got real randomized controlled trials, which, as Dr. Stephen Novella told us, would sort of be our gold standard for evidence on medication. And the randomized controlled trials say ivermectin doesn't work for COVID. And whoop, zipped their lips, Fox News, and everybody goes completely silent, like it never even happened, until yesterday. This is the next level in gaslighting. Fox News propagandist Sean Hannity is now saying, I warned my audience about ivermectin. The studies don't say that it works. This is such a brazen attempt to rewrite history. He can't be allowed to do it. It's classic revisionist history. And Media Matters put together this great article. Hannity's new lie is that he warned his audience about ivermectin. We have a clip which they put together. You're going to hear Hannity now, just a couple days ago, say, I was telling people there's, I don't know about this ivermectin thing. And then you're going to hear all the times he talked about ivermectin, or some of the times. Check this out.
By the way, that I've been telling people ivermectin. Linda, is that not the one thing that I kept saying? There's not a single study that I've seen that shows that it works?
100%.
Ivermectin, as well as other proactive treatments and practices, were already helping COVID-19 patients all across the country.
Now, when you say ivermectin is helping COVID patients, you're saying it works.
Therapeutics, hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, Regeneron. When you talk about ivermectin and Regeneron and incredible therapeutics that are now being used to treat not just breakthrough cases, but all cases.
Whoa.
That includes, yes, the monoclonal cocktail. Known—
By the way, monoclonal is just one of, it's one of my, it's almost better than Trump's rum reservoir for remdesivir.
As Regeneron, the Eli Lilly version of Regeneron, even, yes, hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin. And listen, this is my business, so I'm constantly reading. They've never heard of Regeneron or ivermectin. Ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, that show that taken early, it can mitigate symptoms of COVID-19.
When you say ivermectin mitigates the symptoms of COVID-19, you are saying it works. You're not saying in some limited place it seems like it, but be careful because it's not really a trial. This is classic revisionist history. They get, not Hannity, but in total, Fox gets more than 300 promotions of ivermectin. They say not only that it works, but that it's a conspiracy to prevent it from being used. I mean, going above and beyond what the evidence shows. And then Hannity goes, I've been saying be careful about this. From the start, I said it because we don't know that it works. This reminds me of when Trump in 2018, it's a very dystopian line, said, you can't even believe what you're seeing.
But it's all working out. And just remember, what you're seeing and what you're reading is not what's happening.
Right. Even what you see is not what's happening. How do you know what's happening? Well, Trump tells you. But of course, applied to Fox News, they told you that ivermectin worked. They told you that they didn't want you to know ivermectin worked. They told you that the pharmaceutical companies wanted you to get a vaccine instead of ivermectin or Regeneron for financial reasons, even though Regeneron's way more profitable than vaccines on a per regimen basis. And now they're telling you, I warned you all along. If you had listened to me, you would have known there's no evidence. This is the suspension of disbelief that is required to buy into this cult. And they're willing to do it. And they've shown that they're willing to do it. The grift continues. Actually, it's not even really the grift. It's more the, is it the cover-up? We now have a new report that the gift records for Donald Trump and Mike Pence, they're just missing. They're gone, the State Department says. NBC News reporting, the executive office of the president did not submit information about gifts received by Trump and his family from foreign leaders in the year 2020. This is a this is quite literally how you track the emoluments, adherence to the emoluments clause of the Constitution. You know, when we talk about people in office receiving gifts and things of value from foreigners, this was an issue during the Russia investigation. This is how we track it. This is how we hold them accountable. For 2020, the records are just missing. The article goes on to say, the State Department says it is unable to compile a complete and accurate accounting of gifts presented to Trump and other officials during his last year in office. The data is missing from the White House. In a report to be published in the Federal Register next week, the department says the executive office of the president did not submit information about gifts received by Trump and his family from foreign leaders in 2020. Wow. It also says the General Services Administration didn't submit information about gifts given to Mike Pence and staffers. The State Department said it sought the missing information from where? From the National Archives. and Records Administration and the GSA, but was told that, quote, potentially relevant records are not available because of access restrictions to retired records. Wow. The report notes the lack of gift information could be related to internal oversights, as the protocol office neglected to submit the request prior to when the Trump administration ended. However, it also noted there has been a, quote, this is like the understatement of the century, there's been a lack of adequate record keeping pertaining to diplomatic gifts during Trump's White House reign. I mean, listen, maybe check Mar-a-Lago for those records as well. I don't know. And now there's the reaction, oh, everybody does this. Every administration does this. Actually, no. Go back to the Guardian report from 2018. We learned that the Saudis gave Barack Obama and his aides jewels worth thousands of dollars, according to ex-advisor Ben Rhodes. They got, quote, suitcases full of jewels on a 2009 trip, and they were immediately turned over to the State Protocol Office. No missing records, no question marks. We know exactly what went on. This is a big difference here between the two administrations. And, you know, it's one of these things where individually, well, the documents that Trump ate, he ate because they thought they tasted like Doritos, and so you don't have to worry about that. And the documents he flushed thought they might have E. coli on them, and Trump wanted to get them out of there. And then the documents that he brought to Mar-a-Lago, I'm kidding around about the explanations, but that individually you can say this was an oversight and that was an accident, and then Trump ripped them up because that's what he's used to, but we taped them back together. But then you take the totality and you have to say, this is a pattern. And one of the things that investigators look at, you know, we talk about there are crimes that are really difficult to prove because they go to state of mind. I know this is like a broken record, but perjury. People lie in court all the time. And sometimes the lies are really hard to prove. Like, for example, there's a technique where you can go in when you're supposed to give testimony and you testify in court and you're asked about things and you don't want to lie. You don't want to give a false answer. So you say you don't recall. Now, sometimes saying you don't recall can get you into trouble because good lawyers that are prepared for false I don't recalls have a line of questioning and they have records and they can actually show you did recall when someone else asked you about it or whatever. So lying about I don't recall has its risks. But sometimes for a well-prepared witness, dishonest I don't recalls can get you out of trouble. And you are lying. You do recall. And it's very hard to prove. And that's why you rarely see perjury charges. Okay, that's just one example. When it comes to sedition, for example. Sedition, and maybe I can even pull up the definition, conduct or speech meant to incite people to rebel against an authority. Okay, you know, generally. So with sedition, there's an aspect of saying, well, it's not only what you said, but it was your intent in getting people to rebel against the established order or the government or whatever. These things can be difficult to prove. But context and a pattern is something that can be used to try to show what was in the mindset of an individual. And when you see all the things Trump knew were wrong, right? He said Hillary is irresponsible with sensitive information and private email and not keeping records. So he knew that these things were wrong to do. And then Trump rips up records, eats records, flushes records, steals records, spills secrets to a Russian spy recruiter in the Oval Office that we got from our ally Israel. You see the pattern of him doing things which we know he knew they were wrong because he criticized Hillary for doing them. Then it's hard to say that this isn't a pattern and that this is deliberate action, right? I mean, it just is what it is. Will there be consequences? Probably not. But I do have a voicemail that goes to that. Let's go to that next. We do have a voicemail number. It is available to you 24 hours a day. The number is 219-2-DAVID-P. You can call anytime. Some people leave 20 voicemails in a row. And typically when that happens, they just get deleted. We don't have the ability to field that much material. But here is someone who called in who has a prediction about Merrick Garland, the midterms, and charges against Donald Trump. Take a listen.
This is Jonathan in Los Angeles.
Please.
I believe Merrick Garland is going to wait until after the midterms to indict Trump and his cronies to avoid any appearance of being political. Mm. And in which case we're going to have a huge case of special elections across the country.
I don't see that as likely. And there are some folks emailing me about Trump indictments where it's starting to sound a little bit like this. I don't mean this to be insulting, but it's sort of like the Trump people who were saying, okay, before December 13th, this thing's going to be overturned. Well, it's going to be before January 6th. It'll be by the inauguration. It'll be by March, April, early summer, late summer, Halloween, Thanksgiving. And like, it's just not going to happen. I don't think Merrick Garland is waiting for the midterms to indict Trump and his cronies. I just don't. I see no evidence of that. And unless you know Joe Biden's not running for re-election, I mean, either way, I think there's also a risk politically to doing it after the midterms anyway. So I just don't see that as a likely scenario. But I would love to be wrong, and I'm willing to have my mind changed by the facts changing on the ground. We have a tremendous bonus show for you today. We are going to talk about the average workday. Work from home, higher than ever during the pandemic. Workday length, longer than ever during the pandemic. On average, people are working an extra full hour a day. We'll talk about it. Elon Musk has changed his mind, or Twitter has. Elon Musk, after buying a 7% stake in Twitter, will not be joining the Twitter board. And we will also talk about a bill introduced by Democrats, which would require employees be given time off to vote. Some folks thought maybe you had that already, but not in this way. So we're going to talk about all of those stories on today's bonus show. I also want to remind you, David Pakman Show Town Hall 1 week from today, 6 p.m. Eastern on April 19th. It'll be streaming live on the Pakman Live YouTube channel. That's not the main YouTube channel. That's the other YouTube channel, Pakman Live. Everybody is welcome to participate. And lastly, you can now gift memberships at joinpakman.com. If you have a membership already, great. We have almost 700 people waiting for free memberships. You can sign up and check the This Is a Gift box, and we'll give a membership to someone who's waiting. Joinpakman.com, place to do it. We'll see you on the bonus show or other.
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call jazz. Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-syllable word.
It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM.
Depose from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
WRCT Pittsburgh, meaty and full of flavor since 1940.
WRCT, in sound, from way out.
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Technoland? RCT Techno DJs in the house! Oh yeah, bringing you the only fat beats in Pittsburgh, right here on
concern with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all RDJs are genetically modified. For those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all RDJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
Disrupting lives, nowhere creating heartbreak for people just trying to live their lives as normal New Yorkers. It has to end, and it ends now.
Another mass shooting, this time in New York, as a gunman opens fire on a subway train during morning rush hour Tuesday, firing 33 times. 10 people were shot, another 13 injured. Amidst calls for police reform and gun control laws, what public safety does look like with New York City public advocate Jumaane Williams.
My head train is about to come in. I figured it was important for everyone to see us on the train after that tragedy occurred.
Then, as U.S. inflation soars to the highest rate in four decades, we'll look at the impact of higher prices here and around the world with economics professor Jayati Ghosh.
Inflation is hitting developing countries even harder than it is in the United States, because in most of the world, governments have already not been able to spend enough to actually rescue their citizens from all of the problems of the pandemic. And now that the Ukraine war has led to massive rises in food and fuel prices, people are unprotected and they already had stagnant employment and falling economic activity.
And we get an update from two Starbucks workers on their growing union drive that spread to 200 stores in 30 states.
I'm Madison Hall, and I am a Starbucks barista in Long Beach, California. I am currently organizing my store and have been facing some anti-union tactics from management. This past week, I had a chance to address those concerns with the CEO, Howard Schultz, this past Friday.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Police in New York are continuing to search for a gunman who opened fire on a crowded subway train in Brooklyn during rush hour Tuesday morning. The gunman fired 33 shots after throwing two smoke grenades on the floor of the train. 10 people were shot. Another at least 13 were injured. The New York Times described it as the worst attack in the history of the city's subway system. The shooting occurred in the working-class neighborhood of Sunset Park, which has a large Latinx and Asian immigrant population. Police have identified a 62-year-old man named Frank James as a person of interest in the mass shooting. Investigators say the gunman left behind a bag on the train carrying fireworks, a hatchet, two gas canisters, indicating he might have been plotting a broader attack. They also found a U-Haul key. New York Governor Kathy Hochul spoke outside the train station Tuesday.
The people of the entire state of New York stand with the people of this city, this community, and we say no more. No more mass shootings. No more disrupting lives. No more creating heartbreak for people just trying to live their lives as normal New Yorkers. It has to end, and it ends now.
The Brooklyn attack is just one of several mass shootings that have occurred in the United States in recent days. On Sunday, two people died, 10 were injured in a shooting at a nightclub in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. In Indiana, 6 people were shot, including one fatally at a birthday party Sunday in Indianapolis. And 4 people, including 2 teenagers, were shot Saturday in Washington, D.C., near Nationals Park after a baseball game. Meanwhile, in Georgia, Republican Governor Brian Kemp signed a law Tuesday to allow residents to carry handguns in public without a license or background check. We'll have more on the New York subway shooting after headlines. Russian President Vladimir Putin has said peace talks with Ukraine have hit a dead end. Putin made the comment during a trip to eastern Russia.
And what is